Have resolution 25-483, moved by Councilor Zulak, second by Councilor Haskin. Be it resolved, Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby reconvene into regular open session of council at
6:31.
6:31 p.m. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 25-484, moved by Councilor Kekkonen, second by Councilor Ryland. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby accept the reports, recommendations, and directions arising from the closed session held on November the 18th, 2025. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. We're back into open session, so we'll have roll call once again.
Councillor Morley Haskin.
Councillor Debbie Zulak.
Councillor Nick Ryland.
Councillor Mike Kettenham.
Clerk Administrator Carly Britton.
Deputy Clerk Mary Smith.
Mayor David Moore. Any declarations of pecuniary and or personal interest in the general nature thereof? Hearing none. The acknowledgement in the spirit of reconciliation and cooperation we wish to acknowledge that the land in which we gather is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and the Mississauga people. Its boundaries fall within the Robinson-Huron Treaty of 1850 and the Williams Treaty of 1923. We are grateful to live here, and we thank all the generations of people who have taken care of this land for thousands of years. To honor the suffering of Indigenous people and the love and wisdom they have carried for thousands of years, we pledge to work in community and harmony with each other and the environment we inhabit and work towards truth and reconciliation. On to 11.1, have resolution 25-485, moved by Councillor Haskin, second by Councillor Zulak. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the Township of McKellar 2025 OSIM Bridge and Culvert Report from Tullock Engineering for information purposes and further await a presentation from Tullock Engineering at a future meeting. Discussion? I think, Carly, you were looking for questions. The Council has any on the report? Even though we can't have them answered tonight, we can pass them along. Councilor Kekkonen?
I think probably the main one would be where it talks about the repairs on Broadbent Bridge being urgent and immediately. What is their definition, and is that something we should be tendering ASAP?
Yeah, in conjunction with that, I mean, that's the main one, as you say. They say that was an immediate repair required in the stringers. There are some others, too, I think we wanted to ask. The other ones they talk about, Ford Bridge, for instance, saying it's in poor condition. And they also mentioned Grail. Now, those are less traveled bridges, but it would be interesting to know from them because, I mean, a 1 to 5 year span for repairs is really not too helpful to council. I think as Councillor Kekkonen said, we'd like to know what is immediate and what we should be putting in the budget and what should be done with those bridges. Whether it can be done over the winter or not, I don't know. But it'd be nice to know from them. I mean, they put in costs, rough costs of what should be done. And much of it is snowplow delineation sort of thing, signage and that sort of thing. That wouldn't be too expensive. But some of the other things may be, and I think the big thing on these two, especially with McDougall, the Seguin River Bridge going out next year, I'd be interested to know on, and I know we have a half load period, but I'm thinking of load limits on our bridges too that are going to get excessive use because of that bridge being closed. I'd just be interested to know from the engineering company, none of our bridges, I don't think, has a load limit. And yet they say some of them are in very poor condition. Why don't they have a load limit? How serious is the problem that they're seeing? And should we be considering a load limit, especially on the Herdville Bridge, for next year? I don't know how that would be enforced necessarily, but it's something that I think we should be considering. Just to make sure as well, I mean, people have questioned before, I guess, when half loads are on with propane trucks wanting to go in and we say no in many cases, that they'll have to just go with a smaller truck. We'd want to make sure that people can still access the services that they require. But that's what I'd be interested to know from the engineers, why we don't have limits and whether we should start imposing them. Even if we do, how are they enforced? That sort of thing. I think it's a very detailed report, certainly, you know, bridge by bridge, and all the information they put in there, it's quite good. And I like the, at the end of each section too, they talk about replacement cost, and I think that's the thing that we want to look at. And I think it's much more accurate than what the insurance companies have come up with. They're looking at replacement cost as it is, of course, as it exists in the present time. It's nice to know from the engineers what they think would be worth to actually replace it, which is quite a bit higher than what the insurance has rated it at. Councillor Ryan.
Yeah, I mean, I was mostly confused on page 20 of the report where they list up the repair costs and the maintenance costs. And then they put a $2 million price tag on Ford Bridge, number 8. I mean, yet the total at the bottom is $800,000, so, and the other columns do add up, that one doesn't.
Well, that's a replacement cost at the end, at the bottom, I think.
You put an asterisk there beside it.
In any event, it's a lot of money. So, but yeah, I think the report would be very helpful and useful for the asset management plan, or a version of the asset management plan anyhow, that we can add these things to, because you know, then we can figure out what money we do have and where it could go.
Yeah. Any other questions that Carly can pass along before they come? I suppose we can always leave that open too, to give a cutoff point when you need to know.
No.
So council could send something in to you?
Yep, and when they come to present the report, more questions can be asked at that time as well. But these initial questions, I'll get answers back to council so that they can make decisions with the upcoming 2026 budget.
I have a comment, just a structural comment, is that while the bridges at the beginning are more or less identified and followed, when you get into all the OSIM documents and everything else, they don't have anything on the page that tells me which bridge they're referring to. And of course, I can flip backwards and find it, but by the time you flip forward again, then I found it repeatedly very difficult to understand. And again, it wouldn't be hard for them to put in a header on each page to identify what bridge is this page talking about. Right? And even the pictures, in some cases they help, in other cases, at least for me, they don't. They're just more bridges, right? And it's a straightforward thing. I mean, it's just, you know, I think this is in Word. I don't know if it is or not. But, I mean, just to do that so we know which one, right?
Yeah, no, I agree. The identification, just don't misplace any of those pages.
Because yeah, yeah, God forbid if you don't know where before, you'd be lost, right? So, yeah. But, yeah, that was kind of my frustration. I read through lots of pages, and I'll admit there's huge parts I don't understand. But, I mean, there's other things that I do. But it would be helpful to me as a reader and for other people that are readers to know, okay, if I want to talk about the Ford Bridge, I can go here, and there it is on that page. Or these 10 pages, or actually, I don't actually know how many there are. An awful lot of pages, anyway. So.
Councillor Hassan?
Yep. I was impressed with the report, the detail, and to cover all those structures, but it was very depressing. As to what this is going to cost us going forward. In my rough estimations, it's almost like you got a budget $200,000 a year to eventually get all this work done, kind of thing. And I guess the question for me before we talked to them would be, and for the budget meeting Friday, would be what we will need to budget this coming year. And it looks to me like, as Mike's touching on the Broadbent Bridge, is needs work urgently. How much money are we going to need to spend on that? Because we got to put it in the budget. Unfortunately, it's in this report that we probably will accept. So we're saying we got to spend the money. So is it going to be, for some reason, I got written down here that their cost, they figured the would be $325,000. But I think that's. But then for some reason, I put a note here for year one for the Broadbent Bridge, $100,000. So I'm a little confused. I confused myself, but if we can be, if that can be clear for our budget meeting, if
yes.
They could comment in that
Yeah, in the draft capital budget for the meeting coming this coming Friday, we have allocated funds to the broadband bridge for repairs, and we've allocated funds to which what structural repairs were urgent, so that we would be doing in 2026 and deferring any other repairs that were 1 to 5 years.
Perfect.
Councilor Kackman?
Yeah, so some parts of it, the structure was great. It was very clear compared to the previous versions, but yes, if they would have had all the information regarding one bridge in one section. I know they have it broken down for a reason, but it is really hard. I had to actually put tabs to make sure that I could find the specific sections of certain bridges. But
do you have extra tabs? I think Councilor Ryland wants
them. I'm half listening to it.
But so in regards to Broadbent Bridge, when these reports are being conducted every 2 years, and you look at the corrosion in the pictures, it's like, how was this not picked up? And maintenance suggested, you know, in prior years, before it got to the point where it's falling apart. Like, you know, it's like the steel, you know, was of absolute poor quality, or the maintenance wasn't done at the right times. We're at this point where it needs this major rehabilitation underneath. Something did not happen at the right time, you know, for it to get to that that point. And when you look at previous versions of the OCIM reports, inspections, then, you know, through the years, it makes you wonder that these certain repairs are continually in the 1 to 5 year range, 10 years back. You know, so when does it ever shift into, like, you know, you should probably do that soon. So yeah, there's a lot of questions that I have listed for the when they do the presentation of the report.
I guess one more quick question, Carly. Do you know, is there grants for bridges?
We're continually to look at grants and then specific to bridges currently, but not to say that the treasurer is applying for other grants that funds could be allocated to bridges.
Okay, and do you know if McDougall got a grant for doing the Seguin River Bridge? Do you know?
I have not confirmed that myself, but yeah. I can reach out and ask.
Okay, because we definitely need to apply for a grant for the, I believe it was the Ford Bridge. That's the big, so I would almost think we got to really get aggressive and think about getting something going there, because the report is not a good one for the Ford Bridge, and for us to afford to replace that, that's we need a grant. So, just
well, I know with the Veterans Bridge, it took over 10 years, I think. It kept coming up in the council saying that this has to be repaired, but replaced. And it was only until a grant was available. I mean, that's when it was actually done. And that year, they found some money through a special fund, I guess. And we had the extension on the hall here as well, and the rink, the arena, and also Veterans Bridge. And so, and it wasn't cheap, certainly, Veterans Bridge, but if you look back through the minutes, that's what they had to do. They had to keep putting it off, do some repairs. And it was single lane, too, and we wanted the two lane. And it just took, until you got a grant, you really couldn't do it through taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, we have to certainly look at what's available for grants. And yes, I mean, it's not confirmed. Carly will confirm that, but it was advertised that they got a substantial grant for that bridge. I'm not sure through which company, whether it was Northern Ontario Heritage. They seem to be the controlling group now with all different projects.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm sure they're looking into it.
I think it's, well worth preparing all whatever documentation that is needed to, so it's sitting there on their desk with complete how they want it, and so it's sitting there right in line, and we can just keep bugging them.
Well, and that's why it's so important, I think, and we looked at the asset management plan where it said we have no shovel-ready projects. Well, there's one. I mean, I would say it's ready. We put money aside, too, and I think that's what we have to do in the budget to show that we are serious about it, we've got some money, and that we won't have to go out and venture everything necessarily if we get a substantial grant. It used to be the third that they set up, so the provincial, federal, and municipal. But they don't seem to do the grants that way anymore. So, but I think that's a key, like you said, to do what we can preparatory so that we can say it is shovel ready. And that's back to what I'd said before, too. If it is in that poor condition, as they say, shouldn't we have a load limit on it? I don't know what logging trucks go over it, what else travels over it, but I think there should be a limit so that we can make it last even a bit longer. As soon as you let full weighted equipment go over it, it's bound to have some effect on the state of it. Councilor Ryder?
Again, this is related but not the same. When I was with Park to Park, we had 14 bridges that were in Sequin, and I think another 12 beyond Sequin and everything else, and we found that we had to put load limits on them, and we had our engineer do that, because what we found, and actually the tallest and the biggest and the longest bridge we have, which is over Sequin Falls, is about 35 to 40 feet in the air from side to side, and somebody had driven a tandem axle truck and gone through all of the deck boards, all of them, and those were 2x8s. No, not 2x8s, sorry, 8x8s. And everything else, because when we got there, you could just see it. And the million-dollar question is, so who's foolish enough to drive a fully loaded truck, number one, out there? And then, number two, who got out there with a tow truck in order to be able to get that thing out? And we never found out the answer to any of those questions, and we didn't. By and large, I don't think we had cameras on one bridge closer to Sequin, but it was just a nightmare. But yeah, we found we had to do this, in other words, and also because we were incurring liability, because otherwise you could say, well, my truck's like 50 tons, I thought I could drive across that bridge, right? And if you fell through, you'd fall to your death, quite simply. So it was a constant battle. If I can just mention one other thing, I mean, I noticed about the pages, so once we get into the OSIM forms, which is, I think, on page 30, actually, it starts. The rest of the pages, number one, aren't numbered,
right,
and number two aren't headed with anything or footed with anything that tells me what bridge we're talking about. So do you have this?
I receive it in PDF.
Okay. Well, we can ask them to do it. I don't think it's a big deal. I really don't. I mean, somebody that's used to software could do that in a matter of 10 minutes, right? And all of them, and frankly, the other thing that I realize now that I objected to, the table of contents stops at page 30 as well, right? So why don't you tell me what page, well, first of all, you've got to give them page numbers, and secondly, why don't you tell me where, in Holmes Bridge, or sorry, no, we don't call it that, but the Ford Bridge, on here, and then that way it makes it easier for all readers, including us, right? And it provides a good record that we could build. My opinion would be, and I know Mike has said this many times over the last couple of years, relative to the asset management plan, is we could summarize data that's in this report and put it into a spreadsheet that forms part of an asset management plan, maybe not the asset management plan, and allow us to do that. And in part, for me trying to figure out how I would organize that, it would be to have to organize all these pages that at present are not easily identifiable. And that type of thing. But putting in page numbers and footers and putting in a page header at the top is seriously 10 minutes. Right? And frankly, if I was public, I would be at least mildly embarrassed that I produced a report this big without that level of detail. Right? And truthfully, it's not like I'd have to go through and count them and put them all the numbers. And that happens automatically. I put it in the header on all the pages and it's there. So, anyway.
Councilor Kegner?
Yeah, so even with the Grail Bridge, it talks about the,
on page 8,
so it's page 8, it talks about sandblast and recoat the girders. So why was that not happening with the Broadbent Bridge? You know, wouldn't that be part of the regular maintenance on, you know, whatever time frame that they would normally do that to ensure that you don't have the girders rotting away underneath there, compromised the entire, you know, structure of the bridge, which I think was put in 2008. You know, that's part of the asset management, managing the assets, doing the right maintenance at the right time, being proactive instead of reacting because something fails. So it just, it's really interesting that the description of Herdville Bridge, overall comments, this structure is in overall fair condition. But when you look back at the asset management plans and other reports, it talks about it's in poor condition and remaining useful life 0 years.
Yeah, you
need a microscope to read that.
But you realize we are questioning some of the information in the asset management plan. So,
but you know, to asset condition as per priority rating, poor, possibility of failure, likely, consequence of failure, major. So, and then this report, but the previous ones of the OCM reports, I think listed it in a poor condition, and all of a sudden with no work done on it, you know, the infrastructure underneath, all of a sudden now this is in fair condition. Wow, that's pretty baffling, I think. But anyways, there's lots of questions in here that I think could be directed at the...
And some of the repair work, as you said, could be done by the Public Works Department. I think they have what they can do, and then others would have to be contracted out, be specialized repair. But, yeah.
Yeah, I was surprised by the height of the in-homes bridge railings. I just happened to take a ride up there this summer and stopped on the bridge. It's like, wow, these railings are way down here. I thought that doesn't seem right to me. So, yeah, I see they caught that. So, we'll have to get them fixed at some point. But I like the report, just like what Mike's saying. It's got some good information.
Do we know how they gathered the information that they have on the OSIM forums? Like, did they take previous reports from, well, in this case, maybe Burnside's, but to use to gather the base of the information? Or how much time would they have to spend with township staff in order to gather that?
The only thing they asked of us was to provide the last bridge and culvert report that we had completed. And that was it. Then they had engineering students come out and actually review the bridges.
But looking up like a date that it was last repaired, or the various pieces that are in that report.
I assume they would have got that from our last bridge and culvert report.
Okay. But I do think it's very valuable to have, for sure.
Our last bridge and culvert report, it didn't have really much of anything wrong. When that guy did the zoom, and he was going through it all, he seemed to think everything was good. So that was 2 years ago.
Yeah, and maybe it's good to switch up vendors once in a while, too.
Really?
Let's see if we've got a change in our resolution number. I think I read 485, it should be 486.
Yeah.
Okay. But the resolution is still the same. So any further discussion, anything else you want to pass along, you can send to Carly ASAP, I guess, any questions of the report. I'll call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. To 14.1, I have resolution 25-487, moved by Councilor Ryland, second by Councilor Kekkonen. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby approved the minutes of the November 4th, 2025 regular meeting of Council is circulated. Any discussion of those minutes? Call the question, all those in favor? None opposed? Carried. To 15.1, I have resolution 25-488, moved by Councilor Zulak, second by Councilor Haskin. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby appoint the whole of Council and Reg Moore for the present term of Council to sit on the Township's Committee of Adjustment, and further that resolution number 24-667 is hereby rescinded. Discussion? It's a weird setup. I mean, Council has to be
voted yearly. No, we didn't want to.
Yeah. You don't have a vote in it. Well, you do. But it's weird how to set it up, because council has to be yearly, and the public good for term of council. But anyway. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. To 15.2, resolution 25-489, moved by Councillor Cuckman, second Councillor Ryland, be it resolved the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the proposed consent application number B18/2025, Pasty Anson, to create three new waterfront lots fronting on Ryan Lake and part of Lot 22, Concession 13, Township of McKellar, as applied for by Virginia and Pasty Anson, and application number B18/2025, McKellar, and be subject to the following conditions. Number one, payment of a fee in lieu of park land as required in the Township of McKellar fees and charges bylaw. Number two, that the applicant enter into a Section 5126 consent agreement to A, indemnify the Township of McKellar of any responsibility or liability for the maintenance of Water's Edge Trail, and B, implement the recommendation of the Fry Corps Ecological Services Memorandum dated September 25, 2025. Number three, that the retained lot be rezoned to the rural zone. Number four, 911 addressing for the proposed new lots. Number five, payment of any applicable planning board fees. Number six, the property 10 meters from the center line of Balsam Road to be conveyed to the township. And number seven, that the applicant enter into a license agreement to allow the owners of the existing and proposed lots to cross and maintain a portion of the municipal road allowance for access over Water's Edge Trail, with the cost of which will be borne by the applicant. Okay, we're open for discussion, but maybe turn it over to Patrick. I think he's online and been waiting diligently for us.
I am here. Good evening, Mayor and Council. Am I able to share my screen?
You should be able to, Patrick, yes.
Okay, let me try this here. So I was asked a question about could I show a sketch that revised the consent to give the proposed retained lot water frontage on the lake. And I have a rough sketch, but a sketch here on the West Bay side of your graphic network where I show 60-meter frontages along here. But the problem with that is that this bay here, if you can see, is a shallow bay. It wouldn't make very good water frontage, and it would be a rather strange configuration for a retained lot to go all the way back from the road to the lake. And so there's that point. Also, there has been some discussion, and I saw a letter, a lawyer's letter, about the road allowance that goes, I guess, almost in front of Water's Edge Trail and then accesses the lake here. I believe that regardless of if you want to call it a road allowance or public land or whatever, it is under the jurisdiction of the township. And so I guess that was the reason for added conditions tonight. So I just wanted to point out another point here too. There was a question about the lot frontage for the proposed retained. And if everyone can see, when I do measure from this corner to where Water's Edge Trail, that I suppose is supposed to travel along the question mark shape, but actually travels partially beside it. When I measure that, it is just over 60 meters. So these lines aren't known to be incredibly accurate, but we do use them quite a bit. So I just wanted to point that out as well, and I'm happy to answer any questions if I can. Thank you.
It's the road frontage I was concerned about, and that's why I suggested see if we could do the four lots on the waterfront. But you're now expanding. The application said the road frontage was 46 meters, and now you're saying it's close to 60. You're including some of the road allowance?
Just the frontage on the West Bay Sound Geographic Network, Mr. Mayor, along Balsam Road.
Right, which the application said it's 46 meters.
Right, that would be from, if I can show it, that would be from.
Has he got the screen still?
Let's see if I can show it. Okay. From here to 46 would only come to here, wouldn't get to Water's Edge Trail even. That is assuming that these lines are correct, of course, to be confirmed by survey to be sure.
I'm just trying to reason out what we're doing here. You're saying there would be an agreement, a separate agreement, a license agreement, to allow the owners to cross and maintain a portion of the municipal road allowance for access over Water's Edge Trail. I'm just trying to get my head around what that agreement would say, because in a sense what we're doing is allowing a rural lot with 46 meter frontage, but now we have an agreement that they can use some of the road allowance as well, as long as they sign this license agreement to obtain the 60 meters that's required. Am I reading that right? Or?
I believe the agreement with the road is to allow the users of the road, not just Vast Anson's, but other users that use it now, to first of all cross municipal land, and secondly to do any maintenance or upgrade to gravel or such to the existing road. I think it's an existing circumstance that maybe is going to be cleaned up, hopefully, as part of this process.
Questions from council? Councilor Zulak?
So, Patrick, is it 60 meters frontage? Or is it, like it's saying in the application, 46?
It's hard to determine that. By the pin mapping on the West Bear Sand geographic number, it's 60.
It's 60?
It's 60, and then on other sketches it shows less, but it is 60 when measuring on that.
Okay, so, but are you saying a survey will give you the accurate figure?
It would, yes.
This is why we're fairly particular about this 60 meter frontage, because we had another one not on too long ago, and it almost went to the Ontario Land Tribunal. It didn't go that far, it stopped, and they were looking for a 50 meter frontage, and we turned it down. So we don't want a situation here where we're suddenly approving one now that's less than the 60.
Right, and that goes back to my comments before, where if we think of it as an existing lot, it could be said that we're creating three waterfront lots that meet the bylaws current standards and retain lands, have roadfront and access. So if they were less, it's still an existing situation.
You see, that's where we have to, I guess, get into the semantics. The existing one is that's without any division, any severances. Now that property is going to be severed, the existing one really doesn't exist as one property anymore. You now have four different properties. They're going to be separate description, I would think, each one. So the original, yes, I agree that the water frontage would have been fine, but now you've started creating that retained, which doesn't meet the, you can't use the waterfront that was used before with the original. So in a sense, I know what you're saying, the original lot met the requirements. I'm not sure that that's grandfathered in, though, with the creation of four new lots. And I know they're new in the sense that they're each defined differently now, or described differently. They're not really new. The original one is the only one that counts, but I think you are creating a different lot here. And I'm not sure it should follow the same criteria as the original.
Right, if council's not comfortable with that, then we might be able to do a some sort of reconfiguration if necessary.
The reconfiguration made sense in the sense that it's sort of based on what you were saying, then that would give you the water frontage, which takes precedent over the road. Wouldn't matter what has to be a 20 meter minimum, I guess, for a road, but you'd have your 60 meters on the water, and that would take the precedent, so you would get your lots. And you can have very narrow parts. I mean, I've seen it before with surveyors. They don't, as long as you have the frontage, it can widen out again, but it can have a narrow section to it, as long as it has the depth and the frontage. But I'm just not, as you said, I question the topography, I guess, whether you can get four lots on the water, and as long as you know, it is accessible, that might take care of this road frontage problem that, on Balsam. But you're suggesting it's a shallow bay. There's a difficulty there with the. Oh, we have the we have the applicant here as well. Maybe he'll explain.
I was talking to Patrick this afternoon about that too. How it was drawn in there to create that third and fourth lots there. Just the like you say, the topography. If the way it is right now is a nice building lot where you and there's kind of a jut of land going out, and then that's where a building lot would be. And or a building site, and if you were to kind of cut that in half to create the two 60 meter ones lots, it would basically create two undesirable lots instead of one nice one. So that's where it just wouldn't really make sense to do that, to break up that nice lot there. So we just thought we would see how you would feel about going ahead with the front lot, and hoping you would do it and create a lot and get some extra taxes for you.
So I mean, another option, of course, is two lots that are retained. I know you're not even entertaining that one, but that might resolve everything too. But how do we want the three lots that are retained?
How would that look? The retained, two retained.
Well, the retained would still lead to the water, but then you just have two more lots.
Instead of three.
Okay.
Instead of
the three. You're basically creating two new lots instead of three new lots.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. It'd be nice to be able to do that extra third one, but, as long as you let us. So
it's just the frontage. That's
the
problem.
Yeah, the road frontage, right? So, yeah. I guess it's up to you guys whether you're going to allow the little bit less frontage or not, is what it comes down to. So.
Any other comments from council? Council Pecknett?
Well, the lower road frontage, wouldn't that require a rezoning?
Yeah, it's going to need a rezoning anyway to be rural, but it would need a second, in a sense, a second condition in there. Yeah, that would be a special provision because it doesn't meet the standard.
And then it's not guaranteed that the rezoning will be approved based on the previous situation.
See, everything else seems to be fine. It's just that frontage. If there's some way you can resolve that frontage to make sure that it's 60.
Right, yeah. Going by a survey, what Patrick was going by is showing the 60, but if you actually go by a survey, you would have to actually get into Water's Edge Trail to get the 60, I think. It's really close, but you're talking to Lynn, who knows how new the surveys are, too. So, yes. I can't guarantee it would be 60 at this point, the way things are. So.
Councilor Kagan?
As the mayor had mentioned, so one of the compromises would be one severed, and severed instead of the three severed.
Okay. All right. So it sounds like that's probably with the frontage is the issue, so it's probably not going to work that way on that lot. We kind of have a plan B, maybe. Got a neighbor there, Lincoln Colin. They showed interest if we did get this lot up at the road severed. They showed interest in buying it. So another option would be Patrick and myself were talking about them purchasing a piece of land across on the other side of Water's Edge Trail, a piece that sort of juts out, and it used to be its own little separate lot. There's a little thin piece. We refer to it as a meat cleaver. would it be possible for them to buy that small piece of land and possibly a little bit like how we, the part we were going to sever, or I guess on the paperwork it's called the retained, the one closest to the road. If they were to buy that, can we merge that with their lot? You call it what was it called? 181 or something, Patrick? Where you can merge?
Yes, we did talk about that. The a lot addition would be divided by the municipal land known as the question mark, but there could be a section 118 land titles restriction that would, it would be a lot addition, but the 118 would bind a lot on the meat cleaver to the neighbor's land.
And I think we went through one of those, I'm trying to think, was up with the camp. Kodiak Road, that's it, yeah. Where the property was actually on the other side of the road, but it was still through, as you say, a section 118 that was permissible. So, yeah, I don't, if you just outline even on the what you're talking about the property here, I don't know that Patrick, you have the access to do that. So,
can I approach the screen?
Sure, that'd be helpful.
This slide here, so.
So basically, this piece, so I think on. In reality, this pink driveway here is actually over a little bit, so it would be basically from about here, kind of running down about like this, and so that would merge with this piece here. And possibly, if I don't know how much land they're looking for, but maybe the piece that comes back here that we were calling all of the retained, they might want more of that, but I think for sure they want to this piece here, so which is probably about 3/4 acre.
So it would merge with what piece of property?
With this piece.
With that whole piece?
Yeah.
Well, I don't see any problem with that.
No.
That would make good planning sense, I would think.
Especially since they were showing interest in purchasing that anyways.
Yeah, and if you
don't care. They were afraid of...
it's like their front yard.
Yeah, it's kind of like front yard, because basically this is the Water's Edge Trail. Obviously, it's just a small driveway, so we just use maybe 10 or 12 feet of it, and the rest is just grass that we cut. So, I've been cutting all this grass here, so it looks like, kind of almost looks like part of their property. And he would just like to buy that so that it ensures his privacy and nobody builds a house there and that kind of thing. So.
And then you would, your three waterfront lots, then one of them would be retained and two severed then.
Yeah, that's right. So.
And you don't have to worry about frontages or anything then on the road.
That's right.
So that would sound like a win situation.
Now the way you described it, Councillor Haskell, I agree with what you're saying, but the way I see it, it's just a chunk being taken off the retained right now, and the retained is still a rural, unless they... move that into a waterfront. You're saying it'll still be a rural zone retained, right? Because it doesn't touch water.
Right.
But you won't have to worry about frontages.
Would it be the same zoning as whatever their property is there with the house because it's attached to it? Would it be the same zoning that way? Or
because it's just Water's Trail separates it.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking of the, not so much that piece that's going to be lopped off and moved over, but I'm thinking of the piece in the application.
Oh, further
the retained
back.
Section.
Yeah. Oh, the whole retained going up back in farther.
Yeah.
That goes back to the lake also.
Oh, okay, to the lake, so this is, we're back to...
Yeah, so it actually has probably about, yeah, Patrick brings it up. So it would be basically from about here to here. So there's probably, give or take, 160 or 180 meters retained on the lake. So then these would be the two lots that are being created right there. And then this was the kind of the proposed one that he did earlier, but that just didn't make sense up here as far as the geographics. Yeah. So basically we would end up with these two new lots and all of this being retained up to about here somewhere, and then this would join with the neighbor part. So I'm not sure if you'd have to change zoning on this one.
No.
Probably not, because it's waterfront.
Yeah, stay at waterfront. Yeah. So you're basically transferring to the neighbor. That property basically takes it. Well, it'll be part of the whole deal, but then you're just creating three new waterfront lots, one mm-hmm. being phrased as retained and the other two phrased as severed.
Right.
But Sal, if you could swing that deal, that would sound like a win situation.
And I guess if he doesn't end up buying that from us, it's just, that's just part of, that part of the equation is out of the picture. So I'll have to have a discussion with him and see how it goes, and if they're willing to purchase it, then I guess we would defer this meeting to the next one, or this to the next one, and bring the results of that conversation. And
yeah.
So.
Yeah, that would make sense. That would be the first step, I think, to negotiate with the neighbor then.
Okay. So other than that, the issue of crossing Water's Edge Trail isn't an issue. I guess the license agreement was talked about. In the lawyer's letter, there was the option of an easement. So we were talking, Carly, myself, me and Patrick didn't actually talk about that, but I was thinking myself, unless you have any other opinion, the easement sounds more permanent.
Yeah.
So if you sell a property, a new person doesn't have to reapply for a license, and to me the easement sounded like the way to go.
Yeah,
so
no, I agree. That's the way I read
it. Yeah.
It goes right on title, right?
Yeah. And we had something similar back in the inroad with Ben's.
Mm-hmm.
They had some of their property, I guess, that came onto the township property on the dedicated road.
Oh, yeah.
And that was an easement. That's the route we took.
Oh,
so.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so that would, and then that clause or that paperwork saying that it indemnifies you from any liability, that's all part of that package kind of thing.
That's part of the 5126.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
But
that allows us to maintain the road and all that too, right? 1526.
The solicitor's suggesting that the easement be a separate, not 5126.
Correct.
Right.
Yes.
So
but the 5126 can reference it.
Right.
Okay.
And that's what we have to clarify too. And I'm sure you're aware that these lawyers' bills.
Yeah.
You're going to have to pay for those. So.
Oh, okay. For the municipality?
Right.
Oh, okay. So to do all the easement and
yeah.
whatever?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So is that something you guys take care of and then just bill me for it? Or do
yes.
I have to
yeah. Work? And the township lawyer will do up the easement and then contact your lawyer to do it afterward. But
okay.
Yes, we do all that up front and then you're ultimately billed for it.
Okay. Okay. So, all right.
Sounds good. So we'll wait for the next step on your part, I guess, to talk to the neighbors.
Yep. Okay.
And then you're in communication with Patrick there. That's good. So
mm-hmm.
he'll get back to us.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. Yeah. So thanks for your time, and we'll see how that goes and bring back. Step 99.
Good, if the price is right. Head's still spinning.
Yeah.
Now what do you get me to do?
Anything else for
Patrick? No. So Patrick, you'll bring an amended report to the next meeting to show all the lots will be waterfront now.
I will, yes.
Okay, thank you.
So this will be a deferral?
Thank you, everyone.
Okay, thanks, Ben.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, so I'll put it to a vote of council for a deferral. All those in favor? None opposed, Gary?
Thanks, Paul.
Great, thanks.
Have a good night. Bye. Check the period. Onto 16.1, resolution 25-490, moved by Councilor Haskam, second by Councilor Zulak. Be resolved, the council of the corporation of the township of McKellar has hereby received the minutes of the September 29th, 2025 meeting of the township of McKellar Public Library Board for information purposes. Discussion? Councilor Zulak?
All right, there's a,
I think we all seen
yeah,
what
yeah,
you're
yeah.
talking about.
I just,
what did you tell them?
Yeah, I never spoke to anybody. But anyways, I phoned her and I emailed her and told her that it should say the MTO gave the township of McKellar the old communications tower at Balsamon Center Road, which is no longer structurally sound. A new tower is being erected at the entrance of McKellar Center Road and Lees Road, so... So she got that anyway, so she's going to change it.
Yeah, and maybe while you're changing it, I don't think MTO gave it to us. I think we had to pay. It was a minimal amount, but I think there was a cost to it.
Oh, really? I thought they gave it to us.
It could have been $5,000. I can't remember the exact figure.
Mm.
Yeah. Oh, no.
And a minimal cost then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Councilor Kirkman?
And announcements, point 10. Is that a volunteer dinner that you guys are arranging for all McKellar Township volunteers?
Where are you now?
That's
no, it's just for the library. Yeah, it's just for the library.
That would be
well,
nice.
Dave usually arranges one of those volunteer dinners. I was been waiting for that one.
Well, no, it would have done that, but last time we talked with a volunteer, I think Councilor Haskam said, let's move that over to something else. I think something money spent for the 150 committee. So we lost the money that was in the budget for a volunteer dinner.
Okay.
But maybe it'll show up.
Yeah, but anyways, yeah, but no, it's just for the volunteers in the library.
Thank you.
That's good. Okay, any further discussion on the minutes? Call the question, all those in favor? None opposed, Gary? To 16.2, resolution 25-491, moved by Councilor Ryland, second by Councilor Kekkonen. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar has hereby received the minutes of the October 23rd, 2025 meeting of the Township of McKellar Recreation Committee for information purposes. Discussion?
I think at the last meeting I kind of briefed, I had a copy of this and I briefed through it in my report. So.
Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed. Carried. On to 17.1. We have resolution 25-492. Moved by Councilor Zulak, second by Councilor Haskam. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive report PW-2025-11, acquisition of Kubota Z2520 turn lawnmower from Thomas Stoneman, Public Works Superintendent, for information purposes. And further, the council award Kubota North the contract to supply the township with one Kubota Z252 series zero turn riding lawnmower at a cost of $9,999.99 plus HST of $1,300 for a total of $11,299.99. Discussion? Councilor Kuykendall?
Just one thing regarding the quote that was received from Kubota North. It said it expires 10/30/2025.
So we did confirm that it is holding true until the end of the year.
Okay, thank you.
So the canoe procurement seems to work.
Can you guesstimate how much time or effort that would save by doing it that way?
Quite a bit. Staff didn't have to draft a RFP. We didn't have to post it on our website. Then time doing tender openings, reviewing all of the tenders. So quite a bit It was a smooth process that we seem to have good results with, because we're paying for a lawnmower which we purchased 2-3 years ago, and it's lower than what we purchased back then. So
we're giving
us
good prices going down.
Okay, any further discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. And, 17.2, resolution 25-493, moved by Councillor Cuckinan, second by Councillor Ryland. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the report of the accounts payable preliminary check run report from for October 2025 from Roshan Cantia, Treasurer, for information purposes. Discussion? Councillor Haskell?
I'm curious, the mini hockey sticks, what was that for?
That was purchased through the fire department. For distribution to children at their various events. So like at the McKellar Market this weekend, they were giving out mini sticks to kids.
Oh, perfect.
And it had like fire prevention stuff on the stick.
Oh, nice. Okay. I just thought maybe I missed it on a hockey game somewhere.
When my boys were young, they played mini sticks, is what they called it, down the basement with teams, and put holes in my wall, and I could not catch it. So, and it was like, it was more important to them than playing either ice hockey or road hockey, quite frankly. That's how big that grew. So, because I know how many kids were down my basement telling me, right?
Councilor Kulak?
So on page 3, sand plows and sanders for freight liners. So we're all up to all good now?
Yes, all the trucks have had their maintenance done this fall, and we're ready for when the supplies.
And also, Carly, do you know what the repairs for the cat grader was for $4,600?
I'm not aware. I can ask the superintendent and let you know.
Further discussion of the figures? Councilor Zula?
Yeah, on page 9, under weeks construction, it's got roads hard top. Is that paving? I thought that was, no, what is that? I thought that was Fowler's.
I believe some of the line item for the gravel was likely used up, so then the line item for hardtop was used. Just the full budget amounts within the capital budget, but it's divided between gravel, hardtop, engineering. So I think that's just a GL entry.
Okay.
Councilor Ryan?
On page 10 under Parks and Rec, the first section is there. I see that we're paying for, I think in October, the toilets in Minerva Park, and I know there's 3 of them there, and I you can't tell from looking at this particularly, but is it safe to assume that we've removed those toilets now, that the park's not in use?
Yes.
Okay. One of the things that actually perturbed me to some degree when I was working in the parking lot for the markets was how many people that were not coming to the market that would pull in there, even when the market's running and there's thousands of cars. It's an exaggeration, of course, but and people told me that every time they drive through McKellar, they stop there to use the facilities. And this was not, like, this would be 5 or 6 times a day, right? And people would get out, and then they'd also thought that if they just did that, they could just park in the middle of the road where you couldn't let anybody else in or out. So, anyhow, and so this made me wonder if we're incurring a cost in the other ones. So the answer is no. We don't leave it there after the Thanksgiving market then.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. It's not a huge amount of money. It was just more the principle of the thing, right? So.
And that was the original intent of that property?
Was it?
It's sort of like what the MTO used to have, the roadside places you could stop.
Okay.
And that was the idea of, well, we wanted MTO to actually do it, put the money into it, and they wouldn't. So with the Washington, it worked out, and it works with the market now, too. But there is a time limit, like you said, a certain period of time.
Sure.
And I think they put the three in now as opposed to the two
yeah.
that they had.
Yeah, that is part of it. I mean, when I looked at the price for somewhere else in the report, I mean, it was $190. Well, on this one, even right above it, was $190, presumably for a month. Yeah, September to October. And yet we're paying $336. So are we maybe, it's all kind of immature, but are we getting a discount because we're renting three in that case for Minerva?
Must be.
What?
And
anyway,
those aren't the only
portable
toilets we rent in the municipality too. Like there are other places, so
yeah.
it's okay.
Anyway, it's just a dumb question. Ignore it. It's stupid. So.
Any further questions on the accounts, Councilor Mazzulli?
Down further, planning and development, where it's got generations effect, Bevnik monitoring the Lake Manitowabe.
Are you still on page 9 or 10?
Yeah, the same page.
Okay.
Wait a minute. No, down.
11.
11.
Okay. So sorry, Gavin. We're saying.
Yeah. Generations effect.
Okay.
Bevnik monitoring Lake Manitowabe.
Yeah.
2000. I thought that was done by Lake Stewardship.
They do. They pay a portion. The town pays a portion, and well, obviously not this portion, but Georgian Bay Biosphere pays a portion as well. So. Right, and I don't remember. I think there's four different bills, and the township pays one, and the Lake Stewardship, and sorry, Lake Stewardship pays one, and then MLCA pays two, if I'm right. I know I've seen this before, anyhow. So, and it's kind of strange. I actually know what Benthic actually measures, but that's a different story
okay.
too. So,
all right, just wondering.
Last call for questions.
I have one more, but I can't find it at the moment. Give me,
okay,
give me 10 seconds.
Too late.
Keep going. Yeah. Keep going.
Okay, sorry, on page 16, I think. Yes, 16. At the top of the page where we paid Westburn for the arena lights and all the rest. And I mean, it's not a huge ton of money. I heard very good feedback from people. I think we noticed when we were here for Trick or Trunk. I think Terry noticed anyhow. We walked over and had a look, and it was really quite impressive. And it's certainly much brighter than what we've done before, so it worked out very well, and they were very pleased. The pickleballers, that is, were very pleased that it had gotten completed so quickly. So I'd just like to express at least my thanks on their behalf for them. So.
And to me, the price is really good. Like I really expected for it to be more like 10 or 15,000. So. That's a pleasant surprise.
This is the first bill.
Those lights are probably 25 years old.
Okay, call the question. All those in favor? None opposed. Carried. On to 19.2, Resolution 25-494, moved by Councillor Haskam, second by Councillor Zulak. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the petition letter from residents of Middle River Drive, McKellar, for information purposes. Discussion? Councillor Zulak.
So they said three decades of requests have been ignored. Well, I've never, ever seen a request from Middle River Road, have you? So I don't understand.
No, in the three decades, you can account for most
yes.
of those. So.
Those councils in those three decades all made the right decision, I guess. Huh?
Yeah, so I don't know. I'd like to know where their request went to. I'm thinking they probably just went to the road supers or whoever was doing the road at the time. They probably just said something, but...
Yeah, I can understand their frustration, especially when it comes to the loose gravel.
Mm-hmm.
In the springtime, there you go with all that gravel out onto your lawns, you know, if you maintain right to the road. But it happens to everybody on every dirt road in the municipality.
Is there truth to their statement that other road surfaces have been upgraded from gravel to asphalt?
some of the, to go back in the history, to go back to three decades,
okay.
Roads were done as it could be done, and sometimes it was just in, it was tar and chip, it wasn't asphalt,
okay.
Just in a certain distance. I'm thinking of Maplewood was done in a certain distance to cut down on the dirt that was flying, the road
sure.
Super at the time, and McKellar Lake Road was done in a certain distance, and I think it was Lakeside was done in a certain distance. And then since then, there have been grants, I think, for Burnett's Road, and that was, I think that was a tar and chip, though I don't think that was asphalt, was it?
It was close to $1 million grant.
Yeah.
But
I think it was tar and chip. And then
yes,
we
and then we micro sealed
yeah,
it afterwards.
Then we did
it.
Yeah, and so the same sort of thing here. I'm a little surprised. It's a tone that bothers me more than anything, I guess. I can see why they're upset, but just saying that our requests have been ignored by the township. First of all, I'm not aware of the requests, so the history there would be useful. And I think we look at different roads as people come forward. Some are actually hard-topped. It depends. Originally, if they were subdivisions, it was done by the developer. But that was put in Middle River Drive, certainly before we had that requirement in, as a condition. So some of them have been done a couple of times. I'm thinking of Rainsway. First one was by the developer, and then it's been resurfaced since. And some others have been done as well. And this is certainly go on the list, I would think. I just want them to be aware as well of Hardy's as an example of what's happened. It was hard surfaced, and now we have to deal with all the potholes that are appearing. So there are pros and cons of the surface, and as Councillor Haskin said, it's certainly easier to go on for the first few years, but then you run into higher costs as well to maintain the asphalt, or the, I guess it's not tar and chip, they're requesting asphalt. And it's something, again, we can put down and consider during the budget discussions, I would think, and look at all of our roads and see what the high priorities are. That's certainly not a long road, but it's just the timing, and maybe it's because it is budget time, this is why it's arrived now. It would have been convenient. We had the asphalting done, actually close to that particular road, just the bottom of the hill, right through to the transfer station, so it would have been a good time to consider it as well. But now that it's here, it's a request certainly, and I think we'll have to consider it during the budget discussions. But as I say, we have to prioritize the roads and see which ones we can actually afford. The one other thing, you mentioned the gravel and people receiving gravel from the winter maintenance for the sand. The thing that concerned me a little bit, I guess, was the one comment that's on here. I don't know whether it's part of the petition, but I guess it is. Right near the end, it says, several years I've had the town workers come with their tractor to scrape off the tonnage of gravel and return it to the road. So a little concerned, I think we have to talk to the public works superintendent on this. It sounds as if they're going on private property to do this, and that's a concern that I have. That's something we want to avoid. And as Councillor Haskin said, it's pretty well everybody receives it, whether it's on your property or whether it's on the township property. And I'm sure they do their best to keep it on within the confines of the municipal property, but it can spill over, certainly, when they're turning with the plows.
When I lived on the Paulins Road, I found it quite handy. I just break it all up, put it in wheelbarrows, and put it on my driveway.
Well, you didn't have the township crew do it?
No.
Oh, okay.
So he claims.
Yeah, so he says, yeah.
But, yeah, you touched on all these other subdivisions that have received the tar and chip in the past and everything. That being said, yeah, the amount of properties in those roads are more like 100 properties for all of those ones you mentioned, some more than that kind of thing. So it's, a road with 9. This is almost very similar to Paulette's Road.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much it has 9 waterfront lots and I think 2 back lots. So Paulette's actually has more on it. So it's like you'd have to look at the whole picture, all the roads in the township, and determine, you know, which ones maybe do warrant having a tar and chip kind of thing. And I'm thinking, like, going forward, it would be nice to take certain roads every once in a while and continue with the hardtop, because a lot of municipalities are doing that now. Probably they'll regret it maybe in the future when it does pothole up, and has. But that's part of it, is if you tar and chip it, well, you almost got to be prepared. You're going to be back in 8 or 10 years and be doing it again, but that's supposed to offset the amount of, you know, grading and re-graveling and all that, so it's more or less a long-term investment. But there probably are other roads in the township that should be done prior to this one, but if